way you talk. I've seen this in my own life. That stutter might have made him sound stupid, but it's by a man's eyes that you know his intelligence, and Lincoln Lloyd had some smart eyes. He was as good a worker as you could have asked for. Talk slow and work fast, little and wiry, but muscular, like Cheney. I'd never known Cheney to ask a favor before, but one Sunday afternoon, he came up to the house and asked for me. I put on my slippers and went out on the carport, and Vivi said, "Cheney, let me get you a Coke." The two of us stood there and stared out at the rice. Cheney drank that whole Coke in silence. Then he said, "Boss, I've been with you since my daddy worked with Mr. Baylor Sr., and I ain't never axed you for nothing." "That's right," I told him. "You've pulled your load." "Well, I gotta ax you for something now," he said. Cheney wrapped his arms around his chest, the way he does when he's thinking, rubbed his hand across his face, and kept staring out at the fields. "Mr. Shep, don't let them take Link to the army," he said. "He done got that stutter, and he ain't never been nowhere. Boy ain't never even been as far as Mamou. He ain't gonna make it through no war. I know it up in my joints. See, can you do something for my baby brother? Could you please, sir, Mr. Shep?" He didn't beg. He just handed me the Coke bottle and said, "Thank you for the cold drink. I gotta get on back, or Will Leto'll be wondering where I run off to." This is what I gotta live with. I didn't do a goddamn thing to keep Lincoln out of the draft. McNamara said the army was the best thing going for your disadvantaged Negro youth. The man stood up there with those glasses on and explained how they were going to give boys like Lincoln special classes to bring 'em up to par, teach 'em skills so they could land jobs they'd never get without the army. Lincoln passed the entrance test, which I guess proved he wasn't no moron. And ain't nobody ever said a thing about the boy's stutter getting in the way of him shooting a gun. I said to Cheney one day when he was working on the combine, "Cheney, the army just might be that boy's ticket out of here. Give him opportunities you ain't never had." Cheney didn't answer me, just kept on working. I stood there a full minute waiting for him to say something back, but he acted like I wasn't even there. One day around in that time, I remember I went downtown to Weinstein's men's store and bought me a brand new goddamn suit. The thing was brown with little flecks of green in it. Had the thing tailored and then wore it to the next draft board meeting. I thought, your uptown crowd are not the only people in the world who can put a decent set of clothes on their backs. I was walking out the kitchen door, and Vivi said, "Ooh, Mr. Walker, I'd fight a war over you." I was the first board member to show up at that particular meeting. Me and the draft clerk had to wait 15 minutes for the others to get there. Well, we all get busy, I thought. But when the bastards waltzed in, they were all wearing Madras slacks and topsiders and running on about the golf game. Every goddamn one of 'em had been out at the country club. You could smell it on 'em, that sun smell that comes from being outside without breaking a sweat. The orthodontist looked at me and said, "Hey, Shep, sorry we're late. Couldn't take the office one more afternoon. You know how it is." Neil Chauvin looked at me and smiled, said, "New suit, Walker?" Then Chauvin sat down in his sissy-ass alligator shirt, and we proceeded to see a whole slew of college boys whose student deferments had lapsed. One of 'em, the Gerald boy, was in pre-law, and he actually sat there in front of us and said, "If you gentlemen force me to leave school, my father might as well pour $12,000 down the drain. My education is costing him a lot of money. I'm going to be a damn fine district attorney one day." Later, discussing his case, Chauvin said, You can't send a boy like that to die in the trenches. He's the kind of man Louisiana needs. Then he laughed and said, Besides, I'd never win a case in his father's courtroom again if that young fella doesn't end up on the Louisiana bar. And the others laughed along with him, like it was so funny, like it was all so goddamn funny. 1968. Swatting the years away like flies. They kept saying we were winning. Westmoreland and old Ellsworth Bunker. What the hell kind of name is that anyway? They kept on swearing things were fine. My rice was looking pretty good, but the price of everything you needed was skyrocketing, and you had to read up every day on all the new pesticides and herbicides. Farming was changing fast, but I was there with it. I ended up in the hospital for a couple of days with the asthma. Had to get on the oxygen. Lung guy told me, it's the dust. I said, great. I'll just farm without breathing any dust. That ought to be real easy. I'll just sit around and grow rice in an air-conditioned room. Listen, Doc, I got kids to raise. What you want me to do? He said, well, have you ever considered a change in professions? I said, no, buddy. Have you? Cheney and Willetta got them a framed picture of Lincoln in uniform. The boy looked shipshape. They were so proud of him that Cheney gave me a wallet-sized picture for myself. That Cheney has always loved his snapshots. Sits out under the mimosa tree on Sunday afternoons and pastes them in his scrapbook. Sometimes I wonder if any of us are cut out for the lives we lead. In the middle of the goddamn Tet New Year truce, we had to fight a VC assault against the Saigon embassy. They rained down enemy mortar on all those little towns and dropped napalm on the Mekong Delta. We lost over 1,000 boys. Jesus, we are the United States of America, I thought. What the hell are we doing? We're talking a piss-ass little swamp. Can't we get in there and finish this thing off? I found myself getting in arguments with my buddies at Rotiers. Got to where I'd hear the sound of my own voice and think it was somebody else's. I'd yell, if we're fighting a war, then let's get it the hell over with. What in the world is happening here? I'd think while I watched things from my easy boy. We tore up South Vietnam. The damn peanut-sized country we were supposed to be saving dropped so many defoliants that soil will never be the same. Now, I know defoliants. I've been around them every day of my life. I watched it all on the goddamn color TV. Little Vietnamese girls running out of burning huts, carrying babies in their arms, squealing high-pitched like rabbits in a trap. They ran across the screen until I thought they were going to run straight out of the set into my bedroom. I swear to God, one evening I thought I saw the Vandalek boy on the news, thought I recognized his hands. Man, we beat the whole world and we couldn't even take that little swamp. We trained half those boys down the road at Fort Polk because Louisiana has the same heat and humidity like Vietnam. I know what a swamp is. LBJ said, now there will, of course, be nervous Nellies who will buckle under the strain. I am an American farmer, I thought. I'm not a communist. What do you want from me? I didn't want to be drinking as much as I was. Then even the bourbon quit working, and I was up at 2:07 every goddamn night. I don't know why, but I bolted awake at exactly 2:07 a.m. If I hadn't already had a little problem with the whiskey, I would have gotten me some sleeping pills. Then we fought back. This time we were really going to do it. Lost 2,000 boys pushing back the Tet Offensive. And it took 3.5 goddamn weeks to find out here at Pecan Grove that Lincoln Lloyd was one of them. Willetta's the one that told Sitta. And Sitta told Vivi, and Vivi told me. 4 solid days, and Cheney didn't come to work. didn't say a word. Willetta took off, too, and our house went to pot. All we ate was grilled cheeses. I left for the duck camp and went on a 3-day drunk for the first time since Daddy died. My son, Little Shep, finally drove out there one afternoon and said, "Daddy, you got to come on home. You're gone, Cheney's not working. I don't know what to tell the rest of the workers to do. We got crops in the field." I looked at my son, dressed in his jeans and a starched white shirt, trying so hard to be a man, freckles even on his eyelids. I wanted to pull him to me and say, "Don't let 'em take your ship. The fat gonna stay fat. They don't need your help." He dripped us some coffee, and I showered and followed him on back home. Vivi thawed out some crawfish etouffee, and I ate it with some French bread and 2 glasses of milk. That etouffee smelled like the best of everything in this state. Crawfish was from my own bayou. I sat there at the table and ate it, all hot and spicy, and smeared some more butter on the French bread. You can travel to Paris, France, and not do any better eating than we do here in Louisiana. We were all sitting down together at the table, for the first time in I don't know how long. Sita had on that goddamn eyeliner she wore back then, and I told her, "Get up and wipe that shit off your eyes if you want to eat at my table." She said, "This is not just your table. Don't take it out on us because you're upset about Lincoln." I went to slap her upside the head, but she ducked and ran down the hall. War. It was hanging up in the air, crawling on the ground, swimming in the sea. It was rolling across my supper table. I screamed, "It's not my goddamn fault. Y'all hear me? I didn't start this. I didn't want to see Lincoln Lloyd get his jaw blown off. I've known that boy since he was a baby." I had to fight from crying. Couldn't catch my breath. The kids were staring at me, open-mouthed. I could feel the tight fingers squeezing my chest in. Then Sita was back in the room holding something out to me. It was my inhaler. She put it in my hand, and I reached out and pulled her to me. My boys looked confused. Lulu stared down at her food. Vivi folded up a napkin and said, "I will shoot my son's big toes off before I let them go off and fight in a war." That's the thing about my wife. She is crazy, but sometimes the woman can nail things right on the head. She was the one who eventually drove me down to the Negro funeral parlor. It was drizzling slightly, and there were little lamps on either side of the entrance to the building that made it look like something from long ago. It's funny. Cheney, Willetta, all of them came to Daddy's funeral, but I don't believe I'd ever set foot in their funeral home before. Going to that section of town at night was like being in a foreign country to me. I asked her, "Please, Vivi, would you go in there and tell Cheney I'm out here, that I'd like to talk to him?" Then I waited in the Thunderbird with the window rolled down, watching all the Negroes walk in and out, dressed to the nines, some of them carrying umbrellas, holding on to each other, handkerchiefs in their hands, hats on. Everyone used to wear hats, I remember thinking. When did they stop? Are the Negroes the only ones who wear hats anymore? Vivi stepped out of the funeral parlor and came back to the car. She sat in the driver's seat and stared straight ahead. She wasn't acting like a normal self, but who the hell was? She told me, "Cheney says if you want to talk to him, you'll have to go inside." I took out my pocket knife and started to clean my fingernails. Finally, I said, "Vivi, what should I do?" Her hands were on the steering wheel, gripping it and letting it go, gripping it and letting it go. Then my wife said, "I am dog tired of all this, Shep. It's got to stop somewhere." This was the first time I'd ever seen Cheney in a suit. It was tight on him, and the pants pulled across the front. He was sitting down holding Willetta's hands, and a little group of women was hovering around them. Their hands together looked so brown and wrinkled. Those hands looked for a minute like the earth itself. And for the first time I thought, rice. Those people over there grow rice. I was frozen, couldn't take a step. I just stood there, staring at Willetta and Cheney. The man saw me, saw I couldn't move. He whispered something to Willetta, and they both looked over at me. If you've ever done a kind act in your life, Cheney, please get up now and walk over to me and help unglue me from this spot. I am paralyzed. I'm in the middle of battle, and I can't move. Somebody was humming, and it was sweet and warm in there. You could smell how dressed up they all were. I felt a dizziness come over me, and I thought, Lord, I'm going to faint in this funeral parlor full of grieving colored people. And then there was Vivi slipping in the door. She had on a chapel veil like the Catholics used to wear back then. She took my arm, and we walked across the room to Willetta and Cheney. I was standing right in front of him. Vivi said, I came to tell you how very sorry I am, Cheney. I'm so sorry, Willetta. I want y'all to know you are in my prayers. Cheney looked at her and said, Thank you, Miss Vivian. He did not include me in the thanks. I couldn't believe Vivi didn't say, We are sorry. She should have said, We are sorry. For God's sake, I thought. She's my wife. Why was she saying, I'll be waiting in the car? I looked down at my hands. I was left totally alone in the middle of those people. Tiny flecks of dirt up under my nails. Can a man ever get his hands clean enough? Cheney's fingers were twined up with Willetta's. His palms had a pinkness to them I never noticed before. I had tears dripping down my face. I don't know where all the tears come from. My sinuses are going to be swole up for hours, I thought. Cheney, partner, I finally said, Can you forgive me, buddy? He lifted his eyes, locked them on me, and left them there. I don't think Cheney had looked at me for that long since I'd known him, and all I could do is stand there and bear it. If he'd stood up and punched me in the stomach, I could not have lifted an arm to defend myself. He didn't punch me. He reached up and handed me his handkerchief. It smelled like Clorox. I can still see that old white cotton handkerchief passing from his hand to mine. His bloodshot, almond eyes, his full face, that big chest of his bulging out of what I realized was one of my old suits. I couldn't use that handkerchief until he spoke. Until he said, Yeah, boss man, I forgive you. He said it like there was a bunch of others who wouldn't forgive me. I kept on looking at him. Finally, he said, Go on now. Blow your nose. I resigned from the draft board a couple of months after that. Figured if I was going to do my civic duty, I'd do it on the Garnet River Levee Board, something that might benefit us farmers. We got flooding and drainage problems throughout all this part of the country. Hell, the Mississippi, Red, and Atchafalaya are powerful big rivers. You got to pay some attention to the land and water in your own state. Old Lyndon Baines decided not to run again. Said he was going back to Texas. Said his daddy once told him that down home, the people know when you're sick and care when you die. I never really thought the man meant to keep us in that war for so long. I feel for him. He ain't never had Cheney forgive him. There's a lot of us on Judgment Day that will be ripped out of our easy boys and thrown into a hell we never dreamed of. These days, years after my time on the draft board, I'll sit up at night and watch the Gulf War on CNN. And I'll be damned if I can get to sleep, even hours after I turn off the TV. So I'll lay awake and talk to the old partner. I wouldn't exactly call it praying. I just lay there and talk to him. And sometimes when I listen close enough, I can hear, past the wheezing in my chest, the sound of a heartbeat that isn't coming from my own body at all, but from the fields outside, from the dirt, from the old Louisiana earth.
Playboy's Scrapbook.
Cheney, 1991. I've been taking it easy in my twilight years. I sit out here under the mimosa tree with my iced tea and work on my scrapbook. Oh, I got pictures of it all. Miss City called me the family historian. That's what she say. I got pictures of her when she was the Mardi Gras queen, her hair all long, wearing a green sequin gown. Pictures she done sent letter from when she was gone to Europe and Paris. That child done been more places than any of us here at Pecan Grove, her mama included. Done been everywhere and done everything. I got me clippings of what old Mr. Big Shep done on the levee board. He a big man in drainage. Got my own picture with my grandson Macon holding that 70-pound squash we growed in my garden. Man come out from the monitor, took our picture, put it right up there in the newspaper. Got me the clip where Mr. Big Shep done got one of his DWIs up on Davis Street. Got me the big write-up they done on Mr. Baylor Sr. when he passed. But I don't need no clip to put me to mind of that. Mr. Big Shep called me from the Louisiana Savings and Loan the day after they put the old man in the ground. When the phone rang, I'd be just sitting down to my noon meal, cooling off in the kitchen with an ice rag on my neck in front of the fan. I remember looking over to the windowsill at a sweet potato letter got growing in a jelly jar. Toothpicks stuck in the side to hold it up, roots spreading down into the water. Letter love it when them sweet potatoes shoot green leaves out the top. She get them to spread out all over the TV. Mr. Big Shep say, Cheney, could you come down here to the bank and pick me up? Man, cutting into my lunchtime. Ain't no rest for the weary. I say, your truck broke down, boss man? He say, don't ask me no questions now, partner. Just get your butt down here, please. Something must be bad wrong. That man don't never say please to me. I grab me a chunk of cornbread, get in my truck, go down there to fetch him. He be sitting up in that air-conditioned bank with his legs crossed like he don't hardly never do, look pale as a ghost. His own truck parked right out on the curb. But when I see that man try to stand up, I know why he done hollered for me, his hands both shaking, and he having so much trouble breathing, got his wheezer clenched tight in his fist, trying to act like things be hunky-dory, but when he stand up, he like to fall down. I reach out to steady him, but he pull away. The man got tears in his eyes, and he walking all wompous-sided. Lord, I be thinking Mr. Big Shep better not be drinking this early in the day, or we all in trouble. We get on out to the truck, and then Mr. Big Shep haul off and start to crying like a baby. I don't say nothing, no way. Act like it'd be a regular thing for a grown white man to be slobbering all over himself in the cab of my pickup truck. He choke up and stop himself, put his hands on a dashboard like he holding on for dear life. He say, Cheney, my daddy done died and left me a $100,000 debt to pay off. That's what the bastard done left me. Then he take out that wheezer and pull some breath out of it, stuff it in his shirt pocket, and light up a camel. He keep those camels in his shirt pocket, right along with the wheezer, back in those days. I still smoke my L&M's on the sly, so I can't put the man down. Now, I ain't never heard nobody talk that much money before. Not real-like. Oh, sometime the phone ring and let her say, I answer it. Might be a man wanting to give me $1 million. Something like that. But Mr. Shep, not joking. I ask him, boss, where you want me to take you? You want me to run you on back to the house? He say, hell no, the last thing I want to see is Vivian and the kids. Okay, I say. Then where are we going? I should have known better than to ask him. The man don't know what he want. He a lost sheep sitting in the cab of my truck. So I head out Jefferson Street like I got good sense. Fo' long, Mr. Big Shep say, Cheney, why don't you just drive us around? Just take us for a ride. Okay, partner. Well, I carry us on out to Maidwood, where his daddy used to farm, out on Bayou Latinelle, where all the Dutchmen farm, all thick with pecan trees. Mr. Vanderleck be farming over there. We help him with his harvest from time to time when he in a pinch. I drive down the turn road till we get to the bayou. Then I stop the truck, open the door, and get out. Mr. Big Shep just stays sitting there like it froze to the seat. I ain't got no air conditioning in my truck like he do in his. I open his door, say, come on out, boss. It'd be cooler out here. We go sit under that big old pecan tree by the bayou where Mr. Baylor Sr. used to pull up his black car and eat his biscuits, drink iced tea Miss Hallie done packed him. It was shady, and we sat there, and Mr. Shep just go on and cry and cry. He be pitiful. He'd take his handkerchief out the pocket of his khakis and wipe his nose. He'd say, Cheney, what am I going to do? I can't farm this family $100,000 out of the hole. I can't do it. I need me a goddamn drink. That's what he all the time be saying. I need me a drink. The man be sucking on the juice since he was a teenager. I can't talk, because I used to be sipping my cold tax beer back then myself. But Mr. Big Shep, he talk about a drink the way some men talk about wanting a woman. I tell him what letter be telling me all our life. Say, Mr. Big Shep, you got to turn it over is what you got to do. You got to give it to the Lord. He pull out another camel, take a puff, then snuff it out on the ground with his boot. He got on his dressy boots. That cigarette paper so white there in the good sandy soil. That dirt by the bayou be what we call our ice cream dirt. Good ground. Easy to work. He say, we used to play down here, huh, Cheney? Yes, sir, I tell him. We play down here all the time when your daddy be working this place. He say, Cheney, partner, I'm 33 years old. I got 4 kids and a crazy wife. I should have went to Tulane. I should have been a goddamn son of a bitch lawyer. Ooh, Lord. I hate it when they start to talking like this. You don't hear no black men rattling off all they missed opportunities. They didn't have no opportunities to miss. I just want to slap Mr. Shep upside the head and say, pull yourself up, boy. Quit being such a titty baby. He'd be black, I might have done it. But you don't talk like that to a white man. No how, no way. Boss, I tell him, you got to quit feeling sorry. You got you 3 plantations to farm. Your daddy done built you a brick house. You white, you a man. And you got children what need you. You got you some good soul. If I could, I'd give you this land, Cheney, he say. You're the farmer. Shoo, I say, I don't want it. He let out a laugh, say, shit, it's pathetic. I couldn't give this land away if I tried to. No one would touch it. No, they're not going to let me walk away from my daddy's debt. You ought to thank the good Lord you got two legs to stand on, I tell him. He go on whining. Son of a goddamn bitch, he say. Only thing I could do with my inheritance is run off into the night. I've been working with Mr. Big Ship my whole life, and all I can say is he sure be taking his time growing from a boy to a man. He done had everything a man could want. His daddy done bought him a convertible Buick when he wasn't but 18. Many a time I sat in that outhouse and wiped myself with newspaper wondering where justice was at. Many a time I asked the good Lord why Mr. Shep was the boss and I was the nigger. But looking at him sniffling by that tree, all my envy just fall away, and I get to feeling light-like, feel like someone reach and take a heavy coat off my back. I feel that hot air, a swat of fly off my face, and think, ain't a thing he got I need. Ain't a thing he got that I want. He ain't nothing but a sad, scared white man. Can't even breathe worth a damn. Me, I got a strong body, what my letter love, and I done learnt to roll with the punches from my daddy. That's one thing I know, is how to roll with the punches. Mr. Big Ship, he ain't learnt nothing from his daddy but smoking and drinking and how to sign a check. I go to church on Sunday, sleep good at night, and when there's a rain coming in, I stand out on my porch and smell the earth I've been working. Even if I don't own it, it's still mine. Get up, Mr. Shep, I tell him. Quit your crying. Your people done had this land too long for you to lay down and die now. He look up at me like a little boy, instead of a man only 2-3 years younger than me. Then he stand up, straighten his khakis, run his hand through his hair. He say, let's get on back to Pecan Grove. We're wasting time down here. Maybe I ought to not told the man to stop crying. Maybe I should have just let him sit on that bank under that tree, crying till he couldn't cry no more. Sometime I think about that. Think about maybe Mr. Big Shep's heart done got all hard 'cause of tears he ain't cried. Tears bricked up in there and turned hard. Dammed up rain that couldn't water what needed it. I wish somebody could tell Mr. Big Ship how good he got it. I've been known the man since we was little playboys together. Since my daddy and uncles was working for Mr. Baylor Sr. I've been known the man since we was 3-4 years old, and I ain't never known him to be satisfied. Oh, sure, he might have him a minute or two at twilight after he done had his highballs and come driving down the lane, say, come on, Cheney, ride on back with me to look at the fields. It'll be getting dark way after my work time unless we be harvesting. But I get in the truck with him, and he got that glass of whiskey in his hand. And we ride on back there and look at the beans or rice or cotton or whatever we got in the ground. And you can see him starting to settle down for a minute. But that don't happen much. And when it do, it don't last long. Mainly what happened is the man worry himself sick till he can't breathe most every day of his life. These days seem like he pulling that wheezer out of his shirt pocket and sucking on it every time I look over. When he breathes sometime, he sound like a Mack truck in his chest stuck in the mud. That's how bad it is. Sometime when I get up to pee in the middle of the night and step out on the porch to look at the stars, there he be, sitting up, the light on in his room down the lane. I can see him in the easy chair next to the window, fighting to get a breath. He ain't even got Miss Vivian in there with him. He don't sleep with her since she done move out that room years ago and took over the children's little schoolroom. I had to go up to the brick house and take the blackboards down off the wall in that room. When them kids come home and seen they blackboards and desks out on the carport, they look around so lost. I just stared at the ground to keep away from their eyes. After that, Mr. Big Ship and Miss Vivian act like business people in that brick house. When Miss Vivian tell me to do something, she say, "Get it done before the master come home." She made it up to call him the master. I never called him that, and don't plan to. Pecan Grove, a beautiful place, quiet and green and full of sweet dirt. Oh, sure, there was a whole lot more trees years ago. Whole grove of old pecan trees before Mr. Big Shep done ripped them out to plant the rice and soybeans. Me and Letta used to pick those pecans and sell them down the road at Mance's Grocery. After Mr. Baylor Sr. died, Mr. Big Shep come back here all young and sad and busting to pay back bills, ready to tear up anything got in his way. He'd dig in the earth and pull them trees out by the roots, took near about every bit of shade off this plantation. He said he could get a whole lot more for rice and beans than for any old pecans. I don't judge a man for that. I don't judge a man for any of it. Judge it up to the good Lord himself and nobody else. Boss man punished himself enough the way all that dust blow through his house and into his lungs after he pull up them trees by the roots. I don't worry much. You can't. I done work hard to help Mr. Big Ship pay off his debt. Shoo! There was times when I just wanted to knock him to the ground. And I could have done it easy, 'cause I always been a stronger man than him ever since we was little. Times when he cussing me in the fields, or when he say something smart when he handing over the payroll on Fridays, or when he sent my baby brother overseas to get his jaw blowed off, telling me it was Lincoln's big opportunity. There's a lot I could have said to that white man. I sit under my mimosa tree and think on things, and mostly I don't worry about Mr. Shep or none of the walkers. Some people, they is going to be unhappy no matter what. You could give them everything you have. Take the blood out your own body and give it to them, and they'd still be miserable. That just be the way it is. Oh, Pecan Grove full up with beauty. I got my vegetable garden full of tomatoes and string beans. Letta got flowers everywhere you won't look. Zinnias, hibiscus, hydrangeas. She got something growing out of most ever empty coffee can we done used in our life. She even got flowers growing out of a pair of Mr. Big Shep's old boots he done throwed out. I bet there ain't no more peaceful place on the good Lord's earth than here at Pecan Grove. Ain't no violence, no noise, no shooting, no drugs. Like up on Miami Vice. I watch the TV. I know what's going on. No drugs here. Just my blood pressure pills and what Letta take for her iron. Things might be different up at the Walker House, but I've been talking about my Pecan Grove. We done had us a good life here. A hard-working life. And when we could, we done had us some parties. Catfish cook-ups like you never saw. Sitting out in the yard till way after dark, laughing and laughing. We done good with the hand the good Lord dealt us. We done loved each other. We done raised 2 girls and 5 grandchildren. And we got a great-grandbaby gonna need tending pretty soon. That is just the way life happened. We done lived down the road from sadness all our lives, but you gotta know what sadness be yours and what be somebody else's, is what I say. Sometime later, she be up at the brick house, trying to fix everything, looking out for those children. I can understand that. That been her main job here at Pecan Grove. She ain't never lost no sleep worrying about whiter than white towels for Miss Vivian or serving for the parties. Only thing my letter done lost sleep over is those children. She know them children good. You hand wash her families under things, and you learn more about them than you ever want to. Letter done stood over there many a time and bite her lip, watching Miss Vivian tear into them. Miss Lulu not wearing a brassiere one time for a date, and right in front of Miss Lulu's boyfriend, Miss Vivian done rip that shirt off her daughter, just rip it open down the front and show her little titties. Let her say the shame on Lulu's face make her want to hit Miss Vivian herself. But she didn't. She just walked down the hall and vacuumed Mr. Shipp's room. He like it vacuumed twice a day to keep out the dust. Let her done seen it all, and sometime it like to break her heart. She'd lay next to me in bed and say, "Cheney, I wouldn't trade my life for that central air condition, no way, no how." "Same as me," I tell her, and rub my hands on the back of her neck. Sometimes she cooks special sweet things for them children, trying to make up for the things she can't do. Sometime I holler, "Letta, Pearl and Ruby hungry for sweet things too." But Letta do what she got to. Only one time we done crossed over and butted in, when Miss Vivian liked to beat them children dead outside the house. We step in then, and Mr. Shep give me his truck after that and a small raise. Never made no fuss at all. When the sun set on this land, it looked like heaven. I asked Miss City when she called us from up north, "Do they got sunsets like this?" And she say, "Ain't no sunsets like Pecan Grove anywhere else in the world. City know what it like. The sky be all Easter colors, and you can see the light shooting against that flat green land. You're hearing the birds, crickets, cows, dogs, the one or two horses they got left. Across the bayou now is Bayou Estates, bunch of big houses trying to look like the old South or what have you. Sometimes you can hear their little children out on the driveways playing, which I like, 'cause we ain't got as many kids round this place as we used to. The sound of children ain't never bothered me. It always sound like singing to me. I know we going to Mr. Big Shep and Miss Vivian's funerals one of these days. I know the inside of that Cromer funeral home where all they people been laid out real good. I wonder, will they come to help bury me and Letta when we pass? Only time they done set foot in our funeral home is when Lincoln got killed. When Lincoln got killed 'cause Mr. Big Shep done put him in a uniform. We all four of us been working together day in, day out for, oh Lord, I don't know how long. We done raised crops and children together. Done kept that brick house so clean you could eat off the floors. But like Letta always say, who wanna eat off a floor? You think somebody gonna throw us a party or something for getting through all this? No, sir. You don't get no trophies for living the life you born into. It just be your job, and you lucky if you can do the work set out in front of you and not fret if it seem puny. Maybe the good Lord ain't give us nothing but puny things. Little bit of things sparking through our days and nights. In the fields and in the morning air. Little bit of things that if you blink your eye, they be gone. And ain't never coming back. So I sat outside in the yard and paste things up in my scrapbook. Pictures and news clippings. Old ticket stubs. Oh, just all kind of things. I got to get 'em all in my book before I lose thought of 'em. Time flies so fast, you got to get it down in the book. I put all kind of stuff up in there. City, one time she throw out a bunch of old school pictures. I just lift 'em out the trash and paste them little Catholic white children in my book. Some of 'em I don't even remember their names, but they friends of Miss City's and call my mind back to that time. And pictures of Letta and Pearl and Ruby, all my jewels. From the day we was married to the babies on Letta's hips, to when Pearl got her the job over at the Walmart. Pictures of Letta laughing. Ooh, that woman. How she laugh and look at me like she do. How she walk in the house to take off her church clothes, looking so good in her hat, and me following behind, and her saying, Cheney, who love you? And us crawling up into bed in the afternoon with the sound of the girls playing on the porch and the fan whirring and Letta loving me till everything that ever hurt me fall away. City, she called me the philosopher. Such a sweet child. I wish her daddy knew that for he'd draw his last hard breath. One of these days I'm gonna tell him. Gonna tell him, Mr. Shep, listen to me. It be good to know you children done turn out sweet. It make everything less bitter. It be one of the saving things. Me and Mr. Big Shep was playboys that ran together when we was little, and now we old. That the way it is. Old white man with your wheezing chest. I be sitting down the lane watching you. And whatever you took from me, I don't want it back. I didn't need it nohow. I'm getting lighter every day and don't wish you nothing but easy breathing. In my book, I got it all. All what me and Letta done accomplished here. My book hold all my success. It hold all my sorrow. It hold my harvests. It hold my heart.
Looking for My Mules. Vivian, 1991.
It was getting near sunset. Shep had already come in from the fields and was back in his bathroom taking a shower. I was in the kitchen and could hear the evening farm report on the radio while I was sitting at the counter doing my nails. Over the years, all that droning on about drainage and moisture content, it bothers me less and less. Now it's like a kind of background chat, like Latin used to be at Mass before the church went all kumbaya and guitar masses on me. Charlie Vandalick had just come by bringing us some of his snap beans. That Charlie's thumb gets greener every year. Little Shep had just left out for home after having a drink with me. That wife of his, Kane, won't let him drink in his own house. She runs that place like a lady general. The girl is so damn tall and tailored, it's no wonder she's no fun. Watched too much Donna Reed growing up, if you ask me. I've already brushed my teeth and goggled with Listerine so Shep won't know I've had any whiskey. He can smell bourbon a mile off. The man hasn't touched a drop for 6 months now because, according to that know-it-all doctor he's seeing, it aggravates his asthma. I pretend to go along with the drinking ban just to try and keep things peaceful. Shep's had his beans in since mid-April, and now he's putting in the rice, and he's planting trees. All I hear about is his tree planting program. He's turning into an ecology nut, if you ask me. If I didn't still have a drink or two, I'd be bored into an early grave. Nobody wants to have fun anymore. If they're not teetotaling, they're cutting out sugar or fat or cholesterol. Drives me batty. I've been smoking and drinking and dyeing my hair since I was 12 years old, and I could do an Oil of Olay commercial if I wanted to. That's how good I still look. I can tell we're going to have a marvelous sunset this evening, the way the pinks are already starting to strut across the sky. God, I love my sunsets more than I do hamburgers. I try not to miss a single one if I can help it. I'm looking straight out the picture window when I see this old black man right out there on our gravel road, one I've never laid eyes on before. He must be about 80, but who knows? If I could bottle how well blacks hide their age, I'd be as rich as the Rothschilds. He's got him this old cypress limb for a walking stick, and he's walking along pretty quick, like he's got to be somewhere. Real neat and respectable old fella, you know, no bum or what have you. Got on a clean white shirt and a pair of overalls like all the coloreds used to wear, and there's all this gray hair on his black head that makes him look almost, well, you hate to say it, downright distinguished. He's not looking from side to side. He's looking straight ahead, like he's got an appointment to keep, like he's got a purpose. Now, I know that I haven't ever seen him before. He looks like an old field hand, but I'm absolutely positive I have never laid eyes on him, not even when Shep first brought me out to Pecan Grove before we were married. Not even when I ruined umpity-ump pairs of high heels tromping through the mud, oohing and awing over the man's land. I can remember the faces of all the Negroes who have come and gone over the years, and I have not ever seen this one before. I get the binoculars out of the recipe drawer and focus them on him. I always keep those binoculars handy. You never know when something will come up that you need to take a closer look at. The thing that gets me is how damn determined he looks. Determination is one of the virtues I've always envied, believe it or not. I think, well, I'm just going to leave him alone, even though he is trespassing. Even though we have got the private property, no trespassing sign out there clear as day. He walks past the house without so much as a look my way. When he gets to the cattle gap, he just walks right over it like nothing is going to get in his way. I walk out to the driveway and keep looking at him through the binoculars. Nothing much happens. He just goes on walking. I go on back inside and steal a little sip of vodka, take a steak out of the refrigerator. Shep likes to eat his supper on time these days. I sit back down with the monitor. No good news. I can hardly stand to read the paper anymore. I read my horrible scope, like Shep calls it, and the funnies, and that's about it. We got enough to handle right here at Pecan Grove without worrying about the Iraqis and Kuwaitis and what have you. They bought up half of the Carolina coast as it is. Some of my favorite spots are now owned by sheiks, which doesn't really bother me one way or the other, as long as they still serve good soft-shell crab. I had halfway gotten the old man out of my head when Shep walks into the kitchen, all clean from a shower, heading out to the utility room to clean his fingernails. I will always love the way that man cleans his fingernails after every single day in the fields, and does it in the utility room, not in the bathroom. Those are the kinds of things that keep you married to a man, even when everything else is not what you dreamed on your wedding day when your waist was still small and your feet were tiny. I follow him out to the utility room and tell him, "Babe, an old black fellow walked by a little while ago. Nobody we know." Shep keeps on scrubbing his fingernails. "I am sick and tired of people roaming onto this farm like they own the place," he says. "Can't they read the sign? God damn it, I don't know what it's coming to. A man can't even own private property anymore." "Well, babe, I don't know," I tell him. He doesn't look like he'd bother anyone.
"Oh, yeah, probably just an escaped convict," Shep says.
Shep does not like strangers on his property. In fact, I've wondered sometimes if he really likes anybody on his property. Seems like every single time I go and knock myself out to throw a dinner party, he'll get up soon as we finish dessert and walk back to his room. Few minutes will pass, then he'll come back out with nothing on but his boxer shorts and say, "Good night, everybody. Don't let me keep you. Y'all remember where your car keys are?" And that's the last we'll see of him. The yah-yahs are used to this kind of behavior, but it mortifies me when he does it to somebody new. None of it has been easy on me. I'm a born socializer. I adore entertaining. I was born to throw dinner parties. They are one of the truly fine things in life. Even the Catholic Church hasn't been able to find a single bad thing to say against dinner parties. Shep dries his hands and heads out to his truck. "Well, I'm going to see what the hell is going on back there," he says. "Well, I'm coming with you," I tell him, and we get into the truck and head out to the back fields. I don't think Shep will ever know how lovely it is still for me to ride in that truck with him. There's just something so, oh, I don't know, sexy about the inside of a pickup truck that a man has been working in all day. The smell of the sun and dust and Shep's body. I guess I will just always be a sucker for a man in a pickup truck. I guess that's why I have put up with so much shit over the years. I hear the sound of that man's voice on the telephone after a day of being apart, and it still gives me goosebumps. I still have it bad for him, even though I've lived down the hall for so many years. There is no accounting for chemistry. The day I decided to marry Shep, I was standing inside the River Street Cafe. It was after the war, after I lost my first love, my true love. I looked up and saw him pull up in a red pickup, watched him swing down out of the cab before hardly coming to a stop. He was wearing blue jeans, cowboy boots, and a starched white shirt with the sleeves rolled up. When I saw how the hair on his arms was bleached blonde from the sun, it took my breath away. That very evening, I told Caro and Niecy and Teensy they could stop saying novenas for me to get married. I had found my man, and that was it. Maybe if I'd been born later, I wouldn't have even gotten married. I'd have enjoyed what I wanted, then moved on. Enjoyed that convertible Buick Shep used to drive. And the way he'd lay his head in my lap when we'd park out at Little Spring Creek, and just let it go at that. Not sign up for life, for four kids and farm reports day in and day out. But I was born before you could do what you wanted. That's what my children will never understand. We head on back. Not driving too fast. Shep points out the new drainage system he's been putting in for the rice. I swear the man knows more about drainage than the Army Corps of Engineers. It's a damn shame he didn't finish college. He could have made something of himself. We slow down when we get back by the canal. Then we spot the old black man. You can just feel intention all over the man. He's got the look of a person who knows he's got a job to finish, but can't find where he left off. He stands there, looking at the ground, then out at the fields. Then he shades his eyes and squints off into the distance like he's waiting for somebody to show up. Shep calls to him from the truck.
"What you want, partner?"
Shep's got that gruff voice he gets when he doesn't know what's going on. I hope he won't be too rough on this old fella. The old guy says,
"Yes, sir. I've been looking for my mules. Name is Sari and Mike."
Shep says, "Ain't no mules here, old man. This is my farm. All we got is my machinery." The old man doesn't even hear Shep. He's in another world. He puts his hands back above his eyes and keeps staring out.
"Sari," he calls out. "Where you at, girl? Get your bad self over here. Sari, Sari, we got work to do."
"Partner," Shep says, "we're gonna have to give you a ride out of here."
This is my land.
And Shep gets out of the truck. He takes the man by the arm and helps him up into the back of the pickup. Then we drive past the house and up toward Pecan Road leading into town. When we get to the paved road, Shep goes round to the back and helps the old man out. Then he gets back in the cab. I can see the old fella standing there on the blacktop, his head kind of cocked to the side like he's trying to get his bearings. Shep doesn't say anything, and we drive back to the house. Soon as we get there, he goes on back to his bedroom like he's hiding. Me, I stay in the kitchen. That sunset is taking its time, spreading out all over the flat fields, and I don't want to miss it. If I miss a sunset, my next day is never a good one. It's one of my superstitions. If I miss a sunset, I have to consult the Ouija board. I've done that religiously ever since the kids left. It's part of my schedule. That's the reason I had so much trouble when all four of them were still at home. I couldn't stick to my schedule. They can laugh, but between mass, sunsets, Ouija board, cocktails, and maybe a snippet of a prescription pill, I do fine. I've put together my own package. Anybody says something to me about it, I tell them don't knock it. If you haven't tried it. I've hardly started sprinkling the T-bone with Lee and Perrins when Freddy comes flying up on his little bike. Freddy's one of the kids I got to know after my four left. Lives up on Pecan Road, cute little thing, big ears that stick out from his head. His daddy works for the phone company. I used to let his big sister Crawfish and I buy you, and she would bring him with her. I have known him since he was in diapers. I'm the one that helped him get over his fear of dogs. He just adores me, thinks I'm the greatest. Anyway, he comes spinning up and calls out, Miss Vivi, Miss Vivi. I light myself a ciggy and walk on out to the carport. How you, Mr. Freddy? I ask. Fine, Miss Vivi, he says. Don't you ever start this filthy habit, you hear me? I tell him, pointing to my cigarette. He's all worked up, though. He says, Miss Vivi, there's a black man just wandering around up on the road. You want me to bring him back to Mr. Shep? I think for a minute, then I tell him, Yeah, darling, why don't you do that? And he pedals off like his hair's on fire. I walk back to Shep's bedroom. He is laying back in his chair watching Dan Rather on TV. Baby, I tell him, that old man is still hanging around. Damn, Shep says. A man works all day in the fields. He wants me left alone. Can't I get any peace and quiet anywhere? Well, don't get cross with me, I tell him. I just thought you'd want to know. I fix myself a splash of vodka on the rocks and call up Caro. A damn machine answers. All I get is that damn machine ever since she started that travel agent job. It makes me sick. I call Niecy, but they're sitting down to dinner. I try Chick and Teensy. Then I remember they're in Florida. I hate it when there's nobody to talk on the phone with. I just detest it. I'd call over to Little Shep's, but that tight-ass wife of his told me that any time after 5 is a very busy time in our home. I sit out on the swing and smoke 3 cigarettes in a row, because I will be damned if I stop picking on food and gain weight just because this town is so goddamn boring. Shep comes out, and I stub out my cigarette. We both go out and stand on the carport next to the basketball hoop that we put up when the kids were little. It's funny to look at that thing now. Nobody plays basketball around here anymore. But if someone was to rip that thing down, the whole front of this house would look naked. Strange how things stick with the house. Like the insides of all my lampshades where Little Shep wrote his name when he first discovered magic markers. God, that child adored magic markers. Loved the way they smelled. Loved the way they squeaked when he wrote his name with them. I just hated having to whip him. He loved them so much. But still, the inside of every lampshade in my house was ruined by him scrawling, Little Shep, Little Shep, Little Shep. I stand there next to my husband, not saying anything. When you're married nearly 40 years, you don't always need to talk every second. I would go stark raving nuts if I had to discuss everything the way Sitta wants us all to do. I'm just about to go in and powder my nose when Freddy and the old black man finally show up. Freddy's walking his back, looking like he thinks he's a real important messenger. Shep walks down there, and I can tell by the set of his shoulders he wishes this fella had never shown up in the first place. Shep says, "I told you to move on from here, old man. What you doing still hanging around?"
"I be looking for my mules," the old fella says. "Sari and Mike."
"Partner, I done told you there are no mules anywhere around here. This is my place."